Welcome to the Lilac. Today we get to celebrate Miss Neely Brimer, a beautiful Southern belle who generously shared her journey of caring for her son Will's during his battle with childhood cancer. She is the inspiration behind the blog and passion project Blonde on a Bench, a force to be reckoned with, and a stunning and generous soul. So please help me welcome Miss Neely Brimer.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. First off, this has been burning for a long time. How did a beautiful Southern girl end up in frozen Canada? You are from the South, aren't you?
I am from the South. That's right. Yeah, most of my life spent in Texas. I guess the very long story in a nutshell would be that I met my kid's dad down there. I just left university. I was working for this tiny little sales and marketing firm in a tiny little town about the size of Penticton. And I met my kid's dad down there. And at the time, I had these big dreams. I wanted to be a corporate trainer. That's kind of where I saw myself headed. I wanted to be on Wall Street or working for a Fortune 500 company, telling everybody what to do. And
boss
that job kind of presented itself while I was down there. And his company was based in Calgary. And so I uprooted my life and drove 2.5 days in my little Ford Explorer from Dallas to Calgary and started my life there. And, you know, just the way of the world, that didn't really work out. And as it turned out, I didn't really like Alberta very much. No offense to any of the Albertans out there, but, you know, I'd had my son and we decided to go on holiday. And my ex's mother had retired to Penticton 30 years ago. So we came out here on holiday just to kind of check things out. And I never even knew this place existed. And so we came out here on holiday and I completely fell in love with it and didn't really have the inclination to live in Calgary where I was frozen all the time, and said, why are we living here when we can live there? So picked up our stuff and we're here just a couple months later. So it was pretty whirlwind, but that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
So the Okanagan was calling you.
It was calling me, and it has been ever since.
Yeah. You know, I love stories of people where they go to someplace and they know that it's home, you know, without knowing it was home until they get here. And it's like, wow, like this is home.
It's such an interesting place to be. My family always says this is the best kept secret in the world because they couldn't really believe I was moving back to a small town, and they got here and understood immediately.
Oh, so your family approves of where you live? It's so
Absolutely.
Far away. That's got to be hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're a long way away from each other. But, you know, sometimes the world can feel like a smaller place when you have FaceTime and email and talk as much as we do. So we've managed really well.
And too, like, I think people enjoy when their people move to beautiful places so they can visit the beautiful
Absolutely.
Place. My sister lives in a beautiful place too. And I'm like, if you're going to have to live away from me, at least it's somewhere that I like to visit.
Pick a vacation spot. That's exactly it. I keep asking my brother to move out of the Midwest so that I have somewhere pretty to go.
can you go somewhere tropical for me?
Just right,
for me?
Exactly.
Okay, awesome. And so you're an Okanagan, you're a Valley girl now. You're an Okanagan girl now.
You know what? I've never heard the term Valley girl referenced to the Okanagan, but I guess I am.
I don't know if I've ever used it as a term.
Starting trends here.
A different kind of Valley girl.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And so for work, so you went from wanting to be in the corporate world and it just wasn't fitting for you?
No, it wasn't fitting for me. You know what? Life circumstances kind of played its role in that too. Because what ended up happening, the company that we were working for was really involved in real estate advertising revenue. And I got into this right before the recession hit the US, and we were a startup company and things just kind of fell apart as quickly as they came together, to be honest.
Oh.
So when I moved to Penticton, I actually walked into Salty's my second day I worked here. And then that, of course, turned into an almost decade-long career being there. So, you know, it was just one of those things that I think was in the stars. It was supposed to happen the way that it did. And I kind of refound my love of the culinary arts and found some talent on the way. So it worked out exactly the way it was supposed to.
Yeah. And realize that you've just dropped into wine country, Canada.
And that's right. Yes.
Yeah. This beautiful little pocket, you know, It is. It's a hidden gem. People in Canada are getting more aware of it. And people in BC obviously know where the Okanagan is. But, you know, anybody outside of that realm, it's just like, sorry, what? Like wine in Canada? You can grow grapes in Canada? Like,
it was such an eye-opener for me because I've come from a very fortunate background. My parents are big wine people, and my dad in particular, they love Napa Valley. So I was, you know, very lucky in the fact that I grew up around really, really great wines, but of course never had any idea that any of that happened in Canada or in BC or, you know, now in this town where I live. It's, you know, kind of a foundation of what we do here, right? So that was such an interesting learning curve for me, and how different it is, like how different the wine is here and where it comes from, and you know, the stories behind it. And, you know, they're not these big mass production places here. They're family run, and they've got such beautiful stories behind them. So yeah, I was pretty intoxicated pretty quick by the region itself.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, absolutely. It's research.
Research. I think you're totally right. And it's interesting that you, like, the recession caused the career that you're in was coming to an end, but wine country in BC was having this boom.
It was, yeah.
It was having this this like surge, which that I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in synchronicity and destiny, and the universe has plans. So I think that's really interesting, being one door closes and another opens, right?
Well, it did. And it became this really amazing marriage of kind of what I wanted to do in the beginning, which was train people and develop people and make impact and, you know, be able to really get in there and have conversations with people at a deeper level to make them better at what they do. Yes. And I still got that element of, you know, what I wanted to do in the restaurant, but then I got to pair it with my passion, which is to me a very rare thing. I got very, very lucky that way, that I got to actually do what I like. And, you know, luckily I have a little talent there too. So it was certainly meant to be, I think.
Very cool. And so you have two beautiful children. I've met both of them. And do you want to tell a little bit of your story with Wills? You have a story.
We have a little bit of a story there. So 2018, my son, who was 7 at the time, was complaining of a stomach ache, and, you know, it kind of progressively got worse. But, you know, I'm a mom of a somewhat dramatic 7-year-old. And so I, you know, at the time thought, oh, maybe he's trying to get out of school and this, that, and the other. Didn't really think too much about it. It was a stomach ache. And then I got to the point where he stopped eating. And this was over, I mean, certainly not weeks. We're talking about a couple of days here. And I thought, oh man, he must be getting some kind of a flu or some kind of something setting in here. That's not like William not to eat. Mm. And then the morning that he was supposed to go to school, his dad came to pick him up, and I was pretty sure that he had a fever. And his dad's like, you know what, I'm just going to take him to Emerge to see what happens. And, you know, then I can get him to school right after. And so I had sat down at my kitchen table. It was literally the first day I'd picked up my real estate book, funnily enough. And I had just opened the book to start my course, and my phone rang, and it was William's dad. And he said, you need to come to the hospital right away. So I went down, and the doctor pulled me into a room and said, you know, we've certainly found something in William, and, you know, it's a tumor. And at that point, my world kind of stopped. And then she said, you know, there's really no doubt in my mind that we're dealing with cancer, and it's wrapped around his kidney. And, you know, your life's going to be pretty different from now on. So that was kind of the beginning of this whole thing, and everything changed at that moment. My life will never be the same. ever again after that conversation. And then we just went into full parenting mode. I mean, we were in Vancouver the next day. We started treatment right away. He was in surgery. That was, you know, the majority of 2018 was him dealing with that, and 36 rounds of chemo and radiation, and he lost a kidney, and as it turned out, it metastasized into his lungs. So we were dealing with 9 or 10 tumors on both sides of his lungs and all four lobes, and it was just a really, really scary, messy situation. And then he finished treatment in October of 2018, and we came back, and I had since finished my real estate license course, and so I was trying to get into the swing of that. And most of 2019 was kind of rebuilding our lives, you know, thinking that we were going to put all this behind us and move on. And sure enough, that didn't happen. So end of November 2019, William relapsed, came back in his lungs, and here we were again. And it was an interesting place to be, because the diagnosis that William had is not supposed to come back. It was, you know, these are very high success rates that we had initially got. So we were pretty surprised when it came back. And that was a much more intense therapy that we did then. And he was in the hospital for a week at a time with chemo. He would come out, and then he would go neutropenic, which basically means that his counts go to nothing. He'd spike a fever. We'd be back in the hospital for a week, and then we'd come out for a break, and then we'd start all over again. And we did that for 6 months. So here we are thinking we had it, you know, kind of dialed in again. We finished treatment in August of 2020. And by November of 2020, it had come back again. And this is when things start to get really, really, really scary, if they weren't before, because now we're running out of options. So we went back in January of 2021. And this time he did a very, very high dose chemotherapy. He did a stem cell transplant, and then they removed about 60% of his right lung to try to get rid of the rest of these nodules in his lungs. So, and I mean, that's kind of a stepping stone story of what our 4 years have been like. But the good thing about the happy ending of that story, at least so far, is we just got his first set of scans back after all of this. And for a very long time, first time in a very long time, he came back with clear scans. So we're in a wonderful place right now. We're in a fantastic place right now, but it's certainly been a winding journey to get to where we are now.
Oh my gosh, Neely. Like, I don't, as I said before, I don't believe in synchronicities. You said when I messaged you, I was like, hey, you know, I'm doing some recording. Are you still interested that morning? Right. And you're like, this is so interesting.
Funny timing.
Yeah, the timing. And, you know, what I tell people when they ask what the podcast is, I go, I celebrate people that need to be celebrated and stories that need to be told. And you are exactly that. And my gosh, nobody needs to be celebrated more than you, your family, and Will's.
Ashley, it's been an interesting, that whole mindset has been an interesting thing for me, because when William first got diagnosed, that whole everything happens for a reason thing, it used to make me really mad when people would tell me that. Oh my God, it would make me so mad. You know, there's no reason why this would, you know, happens the way that it did. And but then as we went on and as we went down this journey, I really struggled with that, because I was struggling with faith, and I was struggling with a lot of things, to be honest. And
it's not, you know, fair.
It's not fair. That's exactly it. It's not fair. And I'm really angry about it. But, you know, the conclusion that I came to was, what's worse, that this happens for our reason, or the fact that it happens for no reason? And in my opinion, it's worse if it happens for no reason. And so that kind of shift in mindset, to grow the mindset and to have whatever has happened to William shape my life in a way that's going to mean something to other people, that's got to be the reason. I mean, I can't see it the other way around.
This is a little boy that does not deserve that.
Oh, yes.
It's a family that does not deserve it. Like, if it, yeah, I can imagine the mindset that you would have to, you know, you really have to evaluate yourself and your own beliefs. And I know a lot of people have been through some things, and they get so angry with God or with higher, you know, being like, how dare you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I don't, and I'll still go there. Like I still get very, very angry. I still get very sad. Anger more than sadness most of the time. But I mean, there's such a profound loss that goes around with all of this. There's, you know, there is that loss of your sense of self because your world is on pause when, you know, when all of this is going on. And at the same time, that's exactly where you want to be. I mean, there's nobody else I would want taking care of my child. There's nobody else that I would have wanted William to pick but me to be his mom. But you still have these things that you have to kind of process that, you know, go along with, like I said, just so much sadness, so much loss, so much fear. It takes a lot to process. Oh, I'm still processing it, but to this point, it's taken a lot of work for sure.
Mm-hmm. And something that really struck me about your son when I met him was he's an old soul.
Oh, he is. Yes.
He is a very old soul, that boy. Like, he is. Like he just has this wisdom to him that, you know, I can't think that that's also a coincidence either, you know.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I know that I'm very biased with him being my son, but I really believe at any point now that my son will change your life. Mm-hmm. If you meet him for, you know, 5 minutes or 5 years, he will have an impact on you. Mm-hmm. He's so interesting and funny and deliberate and courageous and is so intelligent, and he just has this real sense of self. And this journey has humbled him, and it's made him a better listener. It's made him, you know, interested of other people and other people's stories. And he's an amazing, amazing kid.
Mm. And he already kind of knows what he wants to do.
Like, oh God, yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that was what I thought was really, really cool about him. It was like, he was just like, oh yeah, I know what I'm going to do. I don't know. My kids have, you know, every year is a different thing, like astronaut, you know, like dolphin trainer, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, whatever you do, you do. But he has this laser beam focused him of like, he has an inner knowing.
He does. And my children could not be more different. And I mean, my poor daughter, Scarlett, she's more like me. But William has had a plan since he was very, very young, you know, and my only parameters that I gave to him was, can you please try to stay one flight away from me? I don't want it to take a day for me to get to you, wherever you end up going in the world. Can we just make it one flight? So he decided that California was the best on the map that he could get to in one flight. So yeah, he chose, he's going to go to school at UCLA. He was going to pursue some kind of, at first it was science degree, but now that's actually changed a little bit. Now he's decided he wants to be a college professor, but laser beam focus. I mean, just gets up. He talks about it on a regular basis. He talks about what he needs to do to get there. I've never seen anything like it. And then you've got my daughter who just wants to be Posh Spice and call it a day. You know, that's the opposite of my kids.
She's the best name. Like, if she is Scarlet.
Oh, she is. She absolutely is. Yeah.
She is a Scarlet Red.
Yes, absolutely.
She is bright and shiny. And,
she's been a light, that's for sure.
How is that? You know, there's also probably like a, as you said before, a grief, right? A grief with all of that you've lost, and the fact of most of Scarlett's life has been watching this as well too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She is. I one of my favorite phrases that I use about her is she's endearing as hell. And, and I think that her upbringing has created this beautiful, empathic, patient spirit in my daughter. But she does it with such grace and comedy and love and brightness. I don't know where children get it. I mean, because I mean, and all of us, we were in a pretty dark space there for a really long time. And maybe we still are, I'm not sure. But she has this amazing ability to find this happiness and make you smile. But she can also read a room. I mean, she would walk into the hospital. I mean, this is obviously pre-COVID, but she would walk into the hospital and she could read the room. She would know if she needed to sit in a corner and color because we needed quiet because Wills was having a bad day, or mm-hmm. she would come and, you know, telling jokes and doing cartwheels and putting on a fashion show to make us laugh, because she could tell that that's what we needed at that point. It's fascinating to me what my daughter has become through this process. I mean, I potty trained her in the hospital, so it's really been everything that she's known, and she's handled it so beautifully.
Well, and that's her normal too, right? Like that absolutely. That was her normal life, you know, yeah. which was so not normal was yeah. normal. Do you sit in the celebration moments, or do you still have that anvil of dread? And, you know, how do you live with that?
Ashley, it's such an interesting question, because when we got this news on Tuesday, I immediately started just bawling. And I think that the tears were from relief, because that was a pretty heavy thing to sit on. Just for information out there, we are out of options with William. So if it were to come back, it would be a very, very scary, very serious thing that we would be looking at. So the weight of that, of knowing that, you know, this scan came back okay, it was this immediate sense of relief. So that happened first. And then I kind of waited for the elation to happen. You know, I waited for the joy to happen, and it wasn't coming, and it wasn't coming, and it wasn't coming, and started to kind of freak me out a little bit. It's like, okay, why am I not elated? But I think that when I talked to my therapist, I think that all of that fear, that anxiety of waiting or even I think I put a wall up of blocking the other option, you know, it just in my world, it had to come back clear because I couldn't face if it didn't. So yeah. I think that fear, that weight, that gravity of that decision, or not that decision, but that result just weighed on me so heavily that it took me a while to process what had actually happened. And I'm still processing it. Like, I don't think that I'm to that point of elation yet, because there's just so much fear there that's blocking everything else from being able to have impact.
Right. I can imagine you would be cautiously optimistic.
Yes.
You know, but you have also been on the receiving end of good news to have that also be taken away.
Yes.
So yeah. I can imagine how cautious you would be, because yeah, fool me once.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we are thrilled, but it comes with its own set of worries too. So
of course.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a learning process about myself and about our family, and hopefully we get better at it as time goes on, but we'll have to see.
Something that is fundamental for me in my people in my life, the people that I choose to surround myself with, is people that listen to the lessons.
Yes.
And have a willingness to examine themselves, to be better all the time.
Yes.
And to learn all the time. And to, I think that's probably the only quality in a human, that it's like, you know, you're not my people if you just never have a willingness to change and be better, because we can always change and we can always be better.
Absolutely.
Given any circumstance, if we choose to. But there are so many people who don't want to be better. They want to stay in a safe place. And good for you to have such adversity and so much to deal with, and you actually still take the lessons, you know?
I think that the lessons are maybe kind of what saved me, to be honest. I was in a really, there was a lot going on there, you know, like there was Will's, obviously there was being away from home. At one point I had lost who I considered to be the love of my life. So there was this real sense of aloneness, and sadness. And then, like I said, you are all these hours away from home. So what do you do with that? Like, what do you do with all of that emotion without, you know, the girlfriend to go and have a glass of Chardonnay with, or, you know, somebody to go and cry to, and to sit with myself, to sit with my own feelings, was pretty much the most terrifying thing I could think of, because I was so scared that if I went there, or if I, you know, meditated or sat still for a second, that all of that pain would rush back and it would hit me, and I would never feel okay again. I mean, that was like a very deep rooted fear. And then I found Glennon Doyle.
And I yes. am not kidding you. That woman changed my life. And that book, just about how she processes grief and how she makes herself sit with the pain, even if it's for a little bit. But then with the pain, there is mixed this beautiful internal spirit that's there to help support. And you have to find that and embrace it and figure out what that looks like for you. And it was life-changing to me. And that I can sit there and I can do a lot of this therapy, not necessarily on my own, but I can process things better than I ever thought that I could. And I'm stronger than I thought that I was. And there's been some really, you know, life-changing, life-altering lessons, yeah, that have come out of this. And I'm so proud of our family for learning the lessons that we have. I can't imagine sitting here and not doing that. The pain that would create would be, I don't know, insurmountable.
Time for a little break. I am so very appreciative of every single one of you that takes the time to listen to this podcast. And to show my appreciation to all of you, I've created a giveaway. Anyone who rates the podcast and writes a review will be entered into a draw to receive a free distance Reiki healing session, chakra balancing, and oracle card reading with me. All you need to do to be entered is to take a screenshot of your review and email me, message me, DM me on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, and you will be entered into the contest. Oh, I can't wait to see who wins. So keep on blossoming, my beautiful souls. And now back to this week's episode.
Okay, Glennon Doyle is my favorite. Yes. She is the reason, a huge catalyst to my podcast, really. It was reading her Untamed. It was yes. recognizing how I've always lived my life to be the good girl.
Yes.
To my own self detriment, like over anything, be the good girl and make sure that you don't ruffle feathers and don't. I had some awareness because, you know, certain things that I've gone through in my life, but not to that deep level that she just uncovered in me of this. Oh my gosh, how I've lived my life is to be this good girl and safe. And I don't want to be safe anymore. I want to be brave and I want to just be me without feeling like I have to apologize for it.
That's exactly, I just wrote on my sheet of paper, I learned to stop apologizing. Yes. And that was a huge thing for me.
Yes.
How often I apologize for just being who I am.
You're very good Canadian, even though you were born here.
Yes, totally. But you know what? I'm not an easy person. And I'm going to tell, I don't mean that I'm difficult, but what I mean is I do feel things. I feel things very, very deeply. And
yes.
when I'm angry, I am angry. And when I'm sad, I am so sad. And I got so tired of people being offended by that or feeling like it was unreasonable. And of course, sometimes I do act unreasonable and I do owe people apologies, but for, you know, on the regular basis, just for feeling what I feel, I found myself apologizing for that all the time at, you know, and to what end? Am I changing? No, yeah. I just, you know, I'm just being very, very real. And, you know, sometimes that didn't come across very well, but no, I'm tired of apologizing for being who I am.
No yeah, you, it's a deep shame for that I had to shed. I like this shame of because I'm with you, girl. I feel deeply. I feel things very deeply. I, you know, so much that I was a very reclusive young kid because I just couldn't handle being so tragically. I call it tragically sensitive.
Yes. Yes.
You know, like tragically sensitive. It's like hard, but it's this I find so many times that the things that are the biggest hurdles for you to overcome are actually your superpowers.
Yes.
You know, and that is my superpower now. I am tragically sensitive and very dramatic.
Yeah.
And Absolutely. All of those things. But that makes me who I am, and that makes me what I am. And it takes a lot of time to recognize that in yourself, to be like, these are the things that actually women are told not to be, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you know what's interesting to me, though, is that that side of me is what made me such a great advocate for William. You know, that's the time when I didn't think twice about arguing for his care or sticking up for him or going against protocol or whatever that is, that fire, that passion, that aggressiveness, whatever, however you label it, that it made me a better mom. It made me a better caregiver. It made like, I embrace that side of me now, whereas I used to fight it, you know, or I would blame it, you know, if people didn't want to be with me or if they, you know, somebody broke up with me, you know, I would blame that side of me for being too challenging, too hard to deal with. And, you know, I think that there's part of that that needed to be streamlined, which I've taught myself a lot about through therapy. But for the most part, it's an asset.
Right. We can always learn how to, you know, be better versions of ourselves. But like at our core, being who you actually are, you should not have to apologize for.
No, absolutely not.
You shouldn't. And that same ferocity also made you fight for your child.
Yes.
You know, that is a huge asset. You did not let any, and something that I think was really beautiful about you, you actually started a project that I really admire. I love Blonde on a Bench.
Yeah.
I love Blonde on a Bench. So can you talk a little bit about yes. that? And did that come from Glennon Doyle as well? This sort of like,
you know what? I would say that she definitely kind of lit the spark on that project. But, you know, like kind of like what I said earlier, when you go through this, your sense of self is you're on pause. For sure. But a lot of cancer and a lot of what we've been through is it's a lot of staring at beige walls, to be honest. It's a lot of waiting. It's a lot of thinking. And you have to sit with yourself a whole lot. And a lot of those moments are sad and they're fearful. And there's just a lot of negative energy that goes with all this time that you're waiting. So I had all this time with myself to think about what I wanted to do next. And I wasn't happy in my career at all. And some of that was having to do with how much time I actually got to spend doing it, which wasn't a whole lot of time. But, you know, I kind of came to the realization that I wasn't ever going to be super, super happy to get up in the morning and sell a house. You know, I'm not going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and watch a documentary about it or read a book about it or anything like that. So I thought about how I could find my passion again. And my passion has always been in the culinary arts. It's always been in food and wine. And now one of my passions is where we live. So I was kind of toying with what can I do to pull together this passion to tell a story that nobody else is telling. And it kind of started out as something that was cute, you know, like this is how you drink wine or this is funny ways to open it. And then as I got to know the people at the wineries, the families and all that kind of stuff, I realized that what I really want to do is tell the story of the humanity behind the wines. You know, I want to tell the story of the grape grower and where his family came from and why did he get into that and what made him move here? Or the guy that gave up his cushy retirement in Vancouver to come out here and dump all of his money into a winery. Like, why did you make that decision? What, you know, what's fueling this? And those are the stories that I wanted to tell. So as of right now, the blog is on a little bit of a pause while I figure out how I can make this format kind of come to life. But it's been so amazing. I love hearing the stories. I love meeting these people. I mean, obviously the wine itself is a big perk of it as well. But yeah, it helped me refine my love of culinary arts and of this place that we love. And I've been lucky enough to be able to tell the story. So I'm hoping to press forward with it. But yeah, that was kind of the inspiration behind it.
And you, as you said earlier too, like there are things you put on the back burner, you know, there are things you have to put on the back burner. And that's hard. That's a hard thing. I'm in this phase of back burner
This is my first episode back in 2 months. So, you know, life happens regardless of my plans and regardless of, and I think that that needs to be told that it's okay. Like, I had this pressure on myself. It's like, so this time last year, I started this podcast and was like doing it every week and I'm going to did it. And it's like, and I did that for quite some time. And there was this point where I hit a wall and the reasons why I was doing it started to, and things just, the universe starts to throw things at you too, right? Where
it's hard to book,
hard to book these like interviews, and then people were backing out and all this kind of stuff ended up happening. And it was this frustration of like, stop a minute, reevaluate, and actually it's okay to take a break. It is freaking okay to not be perfect. And
no,
it's okay to do what you need to do in the time that you need to do it. And it'll come back. And when you do come back, it'll be at a new level. It's those pauses that have been such a great reinvigoration of the reasons I'm doing it. And I'm going to continue. This is a renegade podcast and I'm not going to apologize for that either.
No, absolutely. You know? Well, and I was kind of the same way with the blog, right? I knew that if I tried to continue it when William was sick, that it wouldn't be genuine. It would be out of obligation. Right. And so I was like, you know what, until this is no longer an obligation, I don't want to do it, because the whole point of it was a passion project. The whole point of it was to be genuine and tell the story that I wanted to tell when I wanted to tell it and who I wanted to tell it to. It's my project, not yours, you know? Yeah. So I just kind of got to the point where I was like, no, I'm just going to wait until I can do this exactly the way that I want to do it. And again, I'm not going to apologize for it.
And the reason why you're doing it should be at the forefront, right? And that's what I had a, was like, I'm not doing this to have some obligation to fulfill this, weekly thing that I've decided that's going to be a weekly thing forever and ever. It's like, no, that's not the reason. I do it for the pure joy of doing it. And there's the pull of doing it, and that there's a greater reason for it. And if I stop focusing on the checklist and start thinking about the energy about it, the actual intention of it, then you can refocus in the exact way you need to, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm so excited for you guys to have this time. Take this time, take this moment, take today for yourself, because and pat yourself on the back for just even surviving yourself as a caregiver. My gosh.
Yes. We are going to, we have a little post-cancer celebration trip here in a couple of weeks. We are so excited. We're going to go and sit on a beach and celebrate and hug each other and make plans with each other. And we're so excited to get out of here and to be able to do that with a clear mind and a clear conscience. And yeah, we're excited about it.
So if you had any advice for, if there's anybody listening, because I know there's probably going to be somebody listening because it happens every time, that is going through what you're going through or something similar. What are the things that you, the big takeaways for you of being the caregiver, the one that is the the muscle behind the scenes, you know? Yeah.
It's all of the nurses in the hospital, they got to the point where they would call me momcologist. I became the chart to them. They got to the point where they wouldn't even look at the chart. They're like, okay, Neely, what are the doses? What has he had? When's the last time he had this? You know, you kind of become this like programmable computer. Right. Everything that you have is focused on this little human being that you can't help as much as you want to. There's nothing you can do. And when William was sick the first time and I came home, I could not figure out why I wasn't okay. I just couldn't figure it out. I was, you know, he's okay. He's in remission. You're home. This is what you've been wanting. You've been sitting here for 8 months, you know, waiting for this day for you to come home. And now you're sitting here and you're a mess and you're falling apart. And that was because I didn't focus on myself. At any point, I processed what William was processing. I felt what William was feeling. I lived in his fear and in his sadness and in his sickness. And that's where I needed to be. And that's where I was. And it didn't really hit me that I needed to process my own feelings for a long time. Cause I think there was a little bit of guilt associated with that. I think that there was some, I don't know, a little bit of selfishness maybe, but when I discovered that that's never going to work, that, you know, ignoring yourself wholeheartedly for somebody else isn't helping them. That's when I started to really make a lot of changes. That's when I started reading and leaning into my therapist. One of the hardest things for me to do was to lean into my people, because I felt like there was a real lack of understanding and empathy. And that started to breed resentment. And so, you know, to feel like you carry all of this weight, this burden and the sadness, and that nobody out there understands you, or at least that nobody that, you know, you really care about or that loves you really understands what you're going through, it bred some pretty negative things in me. But then, you know, my mother is a spectacular person and pretty much my hero. And she said, Neely, why don't you just try? Just try to just talk about it. And my girlfriends in my life, my women in my life, and I'm using women specifically because holy shit, are we a strong group. They are the most spectacular resources I could have ever imagined. So my advice would be, number one, to listen to yourself. If you need a day of darkness and TV, have a day of darkness and TV, but don't have too many. You know, make yourself get up and go for a walk, make your bed, make a phone call. I used to avoid my friends. My friends would call me and I wouldn't answer because I just didn't know what to say or I didn't know how to act. And they didn't give a shit about that. You know, come to find out, they didn't care if I answered the phone and just cried. I didn't have to be somebody. I didn't have to show up. I just had to be exactly who I was and feel exactly the way that I felt. And so just listening to that inner self and doing what you have to do to heal, you know, whether that's sitting with yourself or therapy or books or songs, or I used to walk miles and miles and miles a day, just processing, is you have to take care of you before you can take care of anybody else. And that has to be number one. It just has to be, because it will actually create a barrier of how much you're capable of loving your child. Because the more pain that you go through, the more that you see another brick gets on the wall and another brick gets on the wall and another brick gets on the wall. And before you know it, nobody can penetrate that. So that would be by far and away my number one piece of advice, is to take care of yourself.
Oh, I love that. You know, I've had so much healing from the women in my life, because I had the most trauma around women in my life. And it was in healing my relationship with women and understanding that society had taught me to fear other women, and that we were all in competition.
Yes.
That's the biggest bunch of baloney I had to eat as a woman, as a young woman, that we are all against each other, because it is with these powerful, beautiful, successful people that are climbing that make me want to climb too. Yeah. With them. And it's in their rising that I rise with them. It's our greatest fault that we have been so separate. And thank you for talking about that.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And, you know, living.
A book that I really love is The Red Tent.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the idea of the red tent, of this, you know, this community of women. It's like, that's what we've been missing. You know, that's what is what we've been missing. We've been missing washing our laundry at the river together, you know, raising Absolutely. Our children together, grieving our losses together. It's like, we are a community. And my goodness, ever the most mothers in the worst possible situation, holding each other up and still having the strength to hold space for each other. That's such a, just a beautiful thing.
It is. It's so powerful. Just just, and you want to be that person. That's the other thing. You're falling apart and you see somebody, because there's always going to be somebody worse than you, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, you look over and you feel a calling to be there for this person that you don't know. You know, you automatically find yourself walking over to her or bring in a cup of tea to the hospital room just because you know she needs it. It's beautiful.
And I can only imagine what it was like for you to witness the losses, because like I've seen through your, you know, social media, the children that haven't survived this terrible disease, and that they're like family to you.
They are. Yeah. Pre-COVID, all the families pretty much lived in the hospital. So, you know, when William was in hospital for a week at a time, me and Scarlett slept over there with him. So you kind of have this little community, especially in oncology, when you spend so much time in your room and always in common areas together. And, you know, when we lost Gia, that was a really hard moment. I mean, she's 2 years old. Her older sister and Scarlett were best friends. They had sleepovers in the hospital. They had sleepovers in Ronald McDonald House. And she became a little part of the family because her little sister was so sick. And the mother that I spoke about that fell in the cafeteria, that was Gia's mom. And when you lose a 2 year old, it's unimaginable. But everybody, that community is so impacted by it, you know, and yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible to lose a child. It's just, to see that happen to a family, to see that happen to that mother, to see that happen to us, to explain that to Scarlett, to explain that to her sister. It's awful. It's awful. It's something you wouldn't wish on anybody. And we saw it way more than anybody should ever have to witness anything like that.
Parents shouldn't lose their children, and a child at two, like that's
not okay. Really hard. And you know, we lost another little girl, Tina, and that one broke my heart because her mother couldn't speak English very well, and she was really trying to fight with the hospital to have this. She needed a tube to connect her drainage tube to her daughter's lungs because her daughter was too small, and she couldn't articulate it because she couldn't speak English well enough. And I remember watching her; she would be yelling in Mandarin. She's just yelling because that's the only way she could emote what she wanted to say. But yet there was nobody there to understand her, and she never got that peace. And her daughter died because of it. And that was so hard to. And the level of frustration coming from her, from the mother, I can't imagine that. I just cannot imagine wanting to fight so hard for your child and there's nobody there that can listen to you. It's awful. It's just the most tragic thing anybody could go through.
And it's a helpless feeling already having your child be sick.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand your, like how you said earlier about that you were a living computer of being like, that's the one thing you can control.
Yes.
Right. I know all the information I've been told and I can at least control that. And I can, you know, I can imagine that you grasp onto those straws of control that you have available to you in this.
Oh, you absolutely do. Yeah. Cause you don't have control over your career or your finances or shit. You don't have control over the next day. I mean, you're very much at the whim of whatever Mother Nature, the doctors are given to you. So yeah, absolutely.
If you were to talk to your teenage self, what would you tell her, knowing that all everything that you've lived through, what would you tell her?
The biggest lesson, and this might sound very corny and very generic, but the biggest lesson that I have learned is to listen to myself, to trust my gut, to go with my intuition. I could have saved myself a lot of grief and a lot of heartache had I trusted what I was telling myself, and trusted what I now believe my faith to have been telling me. Mm-hmm. That would be the big thing. Now, the teenage me would probably flip me off and steal my lunch money. But if I could pick her to listen to one piece of advice, it would probably be that.
Yeah, mine definitely would have rolled her eyes and been like, sure, love yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Yeah. And you know what? Our teenage daughters will probably do that to us too when we're trying to give them these pearls of wisdom.
These little nuggets of wisdom.
Yes. Yes. They're going to be like, sure, mom, whatever.
Yeah.
That's the cycle of life, isn't it?
Yes.
But part of this podcast is preserving this, that, you know, I don't want to be pessimistic, or, but you know, if I'm not here when my children are become women, I want them to have something of me, that is, you know, the things that I believe in, and the people that I admire. And I want there to be something. So, you know, I can imagine that's part of the reason you created Blonde on a Bench, was this piece of you, you know, it sounds Absolutely. Like a big piece of you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, it's been a massive journey, and I'm very proud of the people that we are now and the lessons that we've learned, and holy shit, have we come a long way as a family and as individuals. And in a weird way, I'm thankful for the lesson. I'm not thankful for how we were taught it, but I'm thankful for the lesson.
Oh, Neely, thank you so much for talking with me. Thank you for allowing me to celebrate the fact that you have clear scans for your beautiful little boy. And
I know. We're in such a great place right now. I've got a new career, and William's in a new school, and we've got clear scans, and you know, we can plan future, hopefully without fear. And it's been the timing on this was perfect, because I'm thrilled that I can kind of add that little ending to the story and it's not this big dot 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 right now.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Awesome. So if anybody wants to follow you, how can they do that on the socials? Can you give your deets?
Yes, absolutely. So the blog is A Blonde on a Bench, all one word. And then my personal Instagram is Neely Brimer. I am pretty good about posting William's story. So in 3 months' time, when we have another set of scans, you'll be able to get updates that way. And I enjoy keeping the community involved in that, because the community has just been incredibly supportive of us. So I think it's important to keep that story going. And we'd love for people to get involved. And especially, Ashley, if you've got anybody out there that's dealing with the same thing as me, or anything like that, that needs an ear, or somebody that really understands what they're going through, please, I encourage them to reach out to me, and I'd love to be that ear or that voice for whoever needs it.
Thank you for being you and sharing your story and giving voice to the caregivers. And I just think you're amazing, and I know that you're going to be so successful in whatever you set your mind to. So I'm just excited to be able to witness your blossoming.
Oh, thank you so much. And I thank you for telling these stories. I think it's really, really important, and I'm a huge fan of yours too. So let's talk again in a couple of years when my son's off to university and we can put an ending to this story.
Yes, let's do that. That's a date.
If you enjoyed today's episode of The Lilac, please reach out. I would love to hear from you. You can message me on Instagram and Facebook at The Lilac Podcast, or go to thelilacpodcast.com. Be brave enough to be vulnerable. Be vulnerable so you can find yourself, and blossom unapologetically.